how was you actually treated by the Italians during the prisoner war camp in Africa? You obviously just mentioned there that this humanitarian brief moment of time as well. Was there things like that throughout?
It was unusual. The Italian guards were on the winning side at that moment, and they just made fun of us. They took the mickey out of us. And they were not guard. They were not good at all. In fact, at one or two spots, stops along that road from Tobruk up to Tripoli, Benghazi up to Tripoli, German soldiers were better to us than the Italians. German soldiers who were going on their way down to the front at Alamein, they were better. Even would give out a cigarette or two, German cigarettes, Turkish.
Yeah.
Awful. But the Italians were on the winning side at that time, and they were cocky with it. It was a shame, but there we are. So we got to Naples in pouring rain, but we went into a big navy place there, and they took our filthy clothes off us in piles. And we had a shower bath on hot water in the middle of the night. And a sheet of paper to wipe yourself with, no towels. And we had to put our old dirty clothes on again.
Yeah.
And they took us outside in the middle of the night, in the pouring rain, with no clothes on, because we couldn't find our clothes. They'd taken them away in heaps. And they were delousing them in a delousing machine. And we went outside after having a hot shower bath in pouring rain in a December night in Italy, in Naples. It's a wonder we didn't all die of pneumonia, but we survived.
What was the feeling like? Was it of suffering? What was the feeling like within the group? Did it slowly get worse? Morale slowly get worse? Were people feeling like it was
British soldiers? The British Tommy has a marvellous sense of humour, and we sang songs. We insulted the guards. In many ways, and made fun until we got our clothes on. And the next morning, those old army uniforms were taken away from us, our own things, and we were given Italian army uniforms of, I should think, about 1900, with pantaloons and putties. And on our backs was big red paint triangle and PG, Prigioniero di Guerra, prisoner of war.
Okay.
And on the knees of big diamonds painted, red paint. But they were warm and funny little side hats.
Yeah.
They were Italian army uniforms of a bygone age. And we had those for about a month.
But you were happy to have them?
Moving, yeah, and they were warm, you see.
Mm.
And a strange shirt. We were given the army shirts. Very strange. And then we moved up from... I went to four camps in Italy. We moved up to Italy. And the last camp was near Bologna, at a big camp, a barbed wire camp, organised by the Italian army. Poor rations, bowl of soup a day, and a little brown loaf. And roasted acorns formed the form of that. That was a coffee. With a coffee essence into it. And we were very fortunate there. We had one or two international Red Cross parcels, one between 10 men. So we had one or two tasty little things, a tin of meat roll between 10 men. You're only going to slice.
Yeah. I mean, you showed me with your hands there the size of it. Yeah, it's the size of a small kind of kilo parcel between 10
Yeah, I mean, 10 men, it was only like a shoebox.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of powdered milk in there, a bar of sugar, a little packet of tea. So we could, with a bit of hot water, we could have a little brew up. We got these occasionally, these parcels, from the International Red Cross. They were mostly from Scotland and Canada and China and places like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in that camp near Bologna, I noticed that I was having difficulty in walking. And my feet, as I walked, my feet sort of flopped.
Yeah.
And everybody knew I was coming. They said, here he comes. And in the end, after about a fortnight, I could only get to the awful toilets there, slit trench. I could only get there by my arms round the shoulders of a couple of fellas to get to the toilet, to walk about the camp. And I had to report sick. Well, there was a British doctor in the camp, living in the Italian quarters. He's a medical officer. But he had no medicine.
Mm.
He had a thermometer, which he could tell your temperature. But he had one or two little pills, but nothing. He couldn't do anything. And I was taken to him, and he was quite concerned about my feet. And he arranged for me to be taken into the Italian garrison there, where the Italian soldiers were, because they had an MO. And when this little captain, medico, when he saw me, he was horrified. And he ran the rule over me.
Why was he horrified?
He said, you must go to hospital. Now, there's no hospital in the camp. They took me about 3 miles away into town where the Italians had... it was a big hospital, a civilian hospital. But one area of it, in the corner, was wired off, and Italian soldiers were guarding it. There was a ward there for about 12 prisoners of war and a guard, 6 medicals, 6 surgicals. And they were busy the whole time, backwards and forwards from the camp. People with hernia, people with appendicitis, and all sorts of things like that. but also people suffering from heart trouble and things. And they, the medicals, and I was put in the medical ward because I was paralysed from here to toes and both legs.
Your knee to your toe.
I lost the use of my legs. And in the end, it was decided that it was through malnutrition, starvation. And an Italian army doctor was working, a young one, he was working in the big hospital, the maternity and all that there, all the civilians. But he came early morning and late at night into the POW place to see how we were getting on. And so he told me through an interpreter, after a day or two, he said, "Your legs, I've come across this before in Abyssinia, with our army in Abyssinia." And he said, "I've worked out a cure." Yeah. And he said, "I am quite willing to try it on you, but," he said, "I wouldn't do it unless you get permission from a British officer, because it might not work. But I have worked it successfully on one or two Italian soldiers in Abyssinia." So that British soldier officer was brought to me, and we had a discussion about it with the Italian. And the British officer said to me, "Well, I think you've got nothing to lose." He said, "You ain't going to walk again." And he said, if the war ends, you'll be going home. You'll be in a wheelchair for the rest of your life. So you go for it." So I said I'd go for it. Now, the treatment was chronic. It was painful. It was terrible.
What was it?
Well, I had some lumbar puncture needles when they stick in your back, about that long. But I had them put in the groins, in here, each side. Now, they didn't have any serum at all to put in there. But he got in touch with the International Red Cross. They were in Switzerland, and they sent two files about that long of stuff which looked like mustard, yellow. And he pumped this into me, each side, in the lymphatic gland. And he said, "If this works in about 2 weeks' time, you'll feel something in your legs." And I did.
What was it? What was it that went in? What was it that he pumped in?
No idea. No idea.
Vitamin. It
could have been cyanide. But I've got a feeling that it might be something in the Novocaine, the sort of thing that dentists use.
Right.
But this was yellow. Now, one morning, I felt a tingling in my toes on one foot. And it was strange. And I found it. And now, at 6 o'clock every morning, three nuns used to come into that hospital and help to wash us. And on that morning, I had that tingling. I said to one of the nuns, the young one, I said, "My foot is coming to life." "Oh, God." She ran and got the doctor, and he came, and he stuck a pin or a needle in my toe. And I went, He said, "It's working. It's working." And they had a celebration. They fetched the priest. The nuns were on their knees at my bed, and the doctor, he was going balmy, but in no time, it was all around the world, all around the civilian ward, that a miracle had been performed.
Yeah.
Tommaso, they all called me Tommy. Tommaso, is working.
Yeah. Oh,
Deo grazia. And gradually, the whole feet came to life.
Mm.
It was wonderful.
Was you still skinny at this point? Was you still malnourished?
Hmm?
Was you still malnourished? Was you still skinny? Was you still starving?
I was still skinny, yes, because we had no more food in hospital than we did in the camp. But the only thing was that we got it on an enamel plate.
In hospital?
Yeah, in hospital, yeah.
Presented differently.
Yeah, because on one Sunday, there was a piece of meat on the plate. It was only about that big.
The size of two fingers.
Yeah, on the plate. And I said to the nun, the one who spoke English, a young nun, I said, is this carne? Is this a dog?
Mm.
Said, no. Gattino. Kitten. Oh. That was a joke.
Yeah.
I said, well, what meat is that? Non lo so. I don't know. Yeah. But you know, we didn't get any extra food in the hospital. But we did get some bits and pieces out of medical parcels that the Red Cross sent the hospital. And there was baby food in it. For milking mothers and things. Because we eat it with a spoon, draw.
Yeah.
Get it down.
Yeah.
And B-Max, which looked like sawdust. Get that down.
What is starvation like?
Painful. God, your guts ache. But the body does get used to it, but you lose so much flesh. However, my treatment on my legs was working, and the lieutenant who did it, he was named, he had a rather posh name, Antonino Alessi. He was a lieutenant in the Italian Army Medical Corps. I'll tell you a little bit about him later. Now, the day came when Mussolini was debagged and thrown out. He was like Hitler, he's his mate. And now, Benito Mussolini ran fascist Italy, but he was overturned in July that year.
What year was that?
He had to flee to Germany to his
mate. What year was that, Dennis?
43.
Right.
Now, the Italians went balmy because Mussolini had been debagged, and the King of Italy took over again, Vittorio Emanuele. Vittorio Emanuele. Now, they had a celebration that day that Italy went mad. And even the nuns made us a little cake out of horse chestnuts, not horse chestnuts.
Yeah.
They had no flour. They ground up some chestnuts, and used that as flour. And they made a little cake in our ward for us to celebrate. But Italy went mad. And I went into the bathroom on two sticks. I was walking then. I went into the bathroom across the way, looked through the great big glass windows out onto the road. And I saw a procession of people with flags going along the road, and all the Italians were all singing. And a horse was pulling the wagon that was, it was a big wooden tank full of around, like a big cylinder, big thing. And it was full of the pumpings out of the toilets, like the drains. It was full of shit. And it was going along the road in this procession, all these people singing round it, but someone had written on the side of it, "Viva il Re, long live the king," on his cart. And I went and fetched the doctor, Alessi. I said, "Look," he said, "That is Italian humour."
Is it?
Yeah. Anyway, I was found fit to go back to camp. Now, something rather unusual happened. The Germans had entered Italy because Mussolini had been debagged, and they were afraid they didn't want the king of Italy to take over.
Mm.
He had already taken over. Marshal Badoglio from the army had more or less taken over, and he was friendly with the king. Now, I had to get my clothes on again, and my old Italian suit and everything, and I got dressed up, and I had to go down to the porch to await the lorry that was going back to the camp, to take me back to camp. And I stood on the step, an Italian soldier that side of me and a German soldier that side of me, waiting in case I ran away. And while I was waiting there, those three nuns who'd been nursing us, helping us, they came down and they pushed the Italian soldier away. And they stood next to me, two of the old ones, they pushed the German soldier away. Two of the old ones stood that side of me, and the young 18-year-old nun stood this side of me. And she was fiddling with her scissors. She had the scissors on her belt, and she was cutting away at something, and she put my hand over, and she clasped something in my hands like that. Now, for an Italian woman at that time to be holding hands with an English soldier prisoner was strongly forbidden.
Mm. Yeah.
To do it with any emotion, a nun even would be defrocked.
Oh, really?
But she was holding my hand there, and there was something in there. When I opened it, it was the crucifix off her belt.
Amazing.
With a piece of blue silk. I wish I'd brought it along. I've got it at home.
Oh, you've still got it?
Yeah, I've got it. I said to her, you take it. You might need it with the Germans here. She said, no. You have it. She said, you might need it where you're going. I said, am I going to Germany? Yes, she said, he's going to take you. So I took her scissors and I cut the lining in my old dirty old jacket down here, and I poked the crucifix in there and I held it. And for the rest of my POW life, for the next 2 years, I was, well, we were all searched morning, noon and night by the Germans. You had to fling a jacket open. And I did it, and never once did a German soldier want me to open my hands. They missed it. I was holding the crucifix. It's in my bedroom at home. I got it home. And I said to that little nun, I'm sure you'll need this more than I. No, no, no. She said, no. She said, wir sind alle Kinder des Gottes. We're all children of God. I said, him and you? And the German soldier, he said, yes. We're all children of God. I said, so I have this. And I brought it home.
Where did you go from Italy? So you was in the north of Italy.
Yes, we went by train, cattle trucks. We went by cattle trucks up to the Brenner Pass, and we stopped in an air raid in the Brenner Pass at Bolzano, and we found that we could lever part of the floor of the truck up, and several of us got out.
All right.
On the track. We're in the middle of an air raid. Blackout, and the Germans, the platform was covered in German soldiers moving down south, the regiment, and they had dogs, and they got wind that prisoners were getting out of the track, so they'd put the dogs on us.
Oh.
So we had to get back in. Instead of 40 of us being in there, they piled us in trucks that had got the floorboards up. So we went for the rest of the way, 80.
Mm.
80 in a truck inside. That wasn't very pleasant because there was no means of relieving oneself. We arrived at Munich in a bit of a stinking state.
Did you... You know, throughout this, how long had you been prisoner of war now? About 6 months? More? No, more.
Yeah, more. Yeah. Yes. But anyway, we moved on from Munich until we went to Leipzig, and we went to a camp on the River Elbe at Torgau. That's where later in the war, where the British Americans and the Russians met. The two armies met on the at Torgau on the Elbe. We didn't know it then, but we were only there a week, and we were sent in parties, working parties, to different camps round Dresden, and I went to Dresden, and because I was an NCO, I was put in charge of 45 of my pals in a brickworks, making house bricks in the kilns. in Dresden.
Mm.
Dresden's famous for china, of course. Mm. The Dresden Meissen is just up the Elbe. And I worked, or we worked, in the brick fields. We made bricks. We worked making concrete pipes. We worked on some digging trenches for say, we worked on the railway, working on railway track sleepers. And we worked also in the railway unloading sacks and sacks of parcels and mails for the German post office, and redirecting them to different trucks for different trains going to different parts of Germany. And that's where we changed some labels over, so that a truck full of parcels due to go to Cologne would land up in miles away. So we got rumbled in that in the end, and the threats of shootings and whatnot.
Is that because that would have been classed as sabotage?
Oh, it was, yeah. It was a terrible sabotage.
And then the Germans used to shoot sabotage, didn't
they? Oh, yes. We had thumb prints taken, you see. And they found out there was some of these sacks arrived in the wrong place. They found on the labels fingerprints, and they tracked it back to Dresden.
Ugh.
But they didn't track it down to individuals.